Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review on this 19th of April, 2014. I'm your host, Cyril Quinn, taking you for the next 90 minutes as we discuss the world of sports. As always, the call number is 347-215-6180. You can follow me on Twitter at William Gerald or hit me up on Facebook.com/CyrilQuinn or go to my website, CyrilGeraldQuinn.com, for any archived or recent audio. Certainly there will be some audio taken from this particular show that you'll be able to listen to in the next couple of days. We finally made it to the NBA playoffs. Of course, the NHL playoffs have already started. But after 82 games, after 6 long months, after probably about 20 meaningless games, we finally get to the NBA playoffs. Certainly looking forward to it. A lot of more intrigue in the Eastern Conference than you thought that would have been the case about a month ago. You know, it's funny, because of the struggles of Indiana. Now, listen, Miami is not what they were the last 2 years. They're just not as good, and you're not supposed to be as good. You're going for a third straight title. They're working on basically, they're going to go over 400 games as far as you combine all their championship seasons along with the postseason. So, you know, you're supposed to be almost at the end of your run when you're going for a third straight championship. Look at the Chicago Bulls in 98. You know, 98, that was their toughest. You know, that was a toughest season with the second three-peat. You look at the Chicago Bulls in 93. That was a toughest season to three-peat, what they had to go through with the Knicks and Phoenix, and also with the Knicks and Phoenix. Lakers in 02, Kings, you know, Sacramento almost taking them out. So, Miami is supposed to be where it's at right now. But Indiana's collapse, which to me is historical, considering – you know, a team who was on the right, you know, had championship aspirations, a team that was developing into a title contender, a young team, talented team, well coached. Their collapse has all of a sudden made the Eastern Conference watchable. You know, for the most part, you know, we as fans have just been assuming Indiana-Miami. We've been talking about Indiana-Miami since October, or, you know, maybe even last summer. But now, you know, with Indiana's collapse, it brings a Toronto, it brings a Brooklyn, brings a Chicago, it brings these teams into play, teams that we wouldn't have been even giving a second thought to a month ago, or even during the All-Star break. We didn't think about these teams. So, I mean, we already knew what the West was going to be and how good the Western Conference playoffs are going to be first round through the conference semifinals. I mean, through the conference finals, the Western Conference is going to be just, you know, just off the charts. But now the East has some intrigue before the conference finals. I mean, you might get a Washington, the Washington Wizards could end up in the conference finals. I mean, they could. So that, you know, even though I don't like where Indiana is at because I want to see them beat Miami, they've indirectly given the Eastern Conference some watchability this first round. Now, they're not going to lose to Atlanta. But second round, who knows? But the NBA playoffs will begin four games today, starting out with Brooklyn and Toronto. You have Brooklyn, Toronto. You have Clippers, Golden State, Atlanta, Indiana, and they will wrap up tonight with a great game, Memphis taking on Oklahoma City. The thing to watch for each playoff, you're watching for the playoffs overall, and you will have plenty of time to get into the individual series. But the thing that you're watching for the playoffs, which team are the Clippers the team that's going to stop either Oklahoma City or San Antonio from getting to the finals? I mean, or can the Clippers, you know, everybody, again, if you listen to this show, you know that I'm not high on the Clippers. But I do understand that this is probably the best team that they've ever had, and this is, you know, Chris Paul. You have Chris Paul, best point guard in the league. You have Blake Griffin, who during a regular season has really came into his own. We'll see, does that translate to the playoffs? I mean, you know what you're going to get from Chris Paul. I mean, I'm not worried about Chris Paul. But from Blake Griffin, you know, now is the time. All those regular season highlights and dunks and, you know, Sports Center, it means nothing right now. You know, what can you get? If the game is slowed down, when the game becomes a half-court game, last 5 minutes, fourth quarter, last 2 minutes, fourth quarter, can Blake Griffin score? Nothing else matters in terms of the Clippers. It really doesn't. I mean, it's all about Blake Griffin during these playoffs, whether they get past Golden State, which I think they will, or not. Like, this big picture is all about what Blake Griffin does in these particular playoffs that will determine how far the Clippers can go. Again, I don't trust Blake Griffin. I haven't seen enough out of his half-court game to say, you know, to think that the Clippers can go far. Amazingly, there are a lot of people that actually believe the Clippers can get out the West, which to me is borderline on being comical, considering the two teams you got in front of them with San Antonio and Oklahoma City. Two teams that, by the way, they don't match up with. I mean, neither one. Now, I haven't even mentioned, the Warriors or Houston or any other teams that they don't match up with. But those are two teams. Oklahoma City and San Antonio are two teams they absolutely don't match up with. So that's the thing I'll be watching for in the Western Conference. As far as the East goes, you're watching for the Pacers. Again, Miami, we've seen this movie before with Miami, Dwayne Wade. You know, Dwayne Wade is like, the Godfather, you know, the Godfather Part Two is Hyman Roth. Remember when Michael Corleone was like, I want to kill Hyman Roth, and you know, you had Tom Hagen trying to talk him out of it, like, you know, he's got a terminal illness. And Michael Corleone had a great line, one of the great lines in the movie. He's been dying of the same heart attack for 20 years. Well, Dwayne Wade's had the same injuries the last 2 years. He comes back, plays well in the finals, Miami wins the championship. Now, I'm not going to say that's going to happen this year, but I'm not worried about Dwayne Wade in the playoffs. I'm not. You know, he's only played 54 games this year. He should be well rested and fresh. That part of Miami, I'm not worried about. The part of Miami I'll be concerned about is the defense. That will keep them from winning a championship, is their defense. But I'm not concerned about Dwayne Wade. Thing to watch for in the Eastern Conference is the Indiana Pacers. Can they get it together? I mean, they had a couple good wins. They had a good win against Oklahoma City last week. Again, Atlanta should be a walkover. Then they'll have the prospects of facing either Brooklyn, of course, not Brooklyn, but either they'll face either Washington or Chicago in the second round. So, you know, we'll see. They'll have a chance. Listen, they can use the Atlanta series to kind of work themselves into the playoffs. All due respect to my Atlanta people, but Atlanta is that team that you wish could be replaced by, say, the Phoenix Suns. They don't belong in the playoffs at all. And we'll get to that too. I think the NBA should make some changes as far as how we take our playoff, how we, you know, collect our playoff teams, and like, I don't, you shouldn't be allowed in the playoffs if you don't have a 500 record. I mean, you shouldn't. It's, I mean, there are too many other quality teams. You know, when you got a team that almost won 50 games, that's outside the playoffs. I don't care what conference it is, but we'll discuss that later on in the program. So, Eastern Conference, you're looking at Indiana, and you're also looking at the emergence of, you know, can guys like John Wall step up, Kyle Lowry. And Western Conference, you're looking at the Los Angeles Clippers. Is it the Clipper? Is it a Clipper year? And I'm just been, and I just, you know, don't know what I'm talking about, or I'm just not giving them enough credit, or the fact that I'm a Laker fan and I can't stand the fact that they're winning, and you know, a lot of Lakers are in the dumps. It could be. It could be. We'll see. 347-215-6180 is your call number on this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. When we return, we'll have Saturday morning headlines. And we'll also, I'll also tell you why you should be proud to be an American. That's coming up on this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. We'll be right back. Edition of the Cyril Quinn Review, 347-215-6180. A busy weekend in the world of sports. NBA playoffs will, of course, get started this afternoon, or this early afternoon, with Toronto and Brooklyn. NHL playoffs are already, have already got kicked off, have already gotten started. Last night, you had Detroit taking out Boston 1-0. Montreal takes out Tampa Bay 4-1, and Anaheim goes up 2-0 with a 3-2 victory over I believe it was Minnesota. Yeah, Minnesota Wild. I should know that. I'm sorry to my apologize to my NHL audience. If you're Boston, and this is what I love about the NHL postseason, anything can happen. It's like the NHL postseason has an NCAA tournament type feel to it, instead, with the exception that it's still seven games. Still, there's still a seven game series, but you could have a one seed lose to an eighth seed. Now, again, I know they switched the format and have, you don't have one versus eight, but you know what I mean. You could have a team like Detroit limped into the playoffs. Detroit had 93 points. Okay. it's not a vintage Detroit team. 23rd straight year that they made the playoffs. But everybody, like, people, you'll watch Detroit. If anybody watched Detroit this year, they had a bunch of injuries. But they had championship pedigree. If you are a Boston fan, when you got that matchup, you probably had to be just kind of shaking. You had to be shaking in your boots behind that matchup because you're facing a team that has not only has championship pedigree, but frankly, in the regular season, had your number. Detroit beat Boston 3 out of 4 times, so they have. There's no fear factor. You have a team that has championship pedigree. Pavel Dzyk, Zetterberg, Abdelkader. I mean, they have talent too. I mean, Jimmy Howard he can get hot. So this is the worst matchup that the Boston Bruins could get. Out of all of them, it's unbelievable. Like, Boston Bruins were the best team in the league over the regular season. They won the President's Cup for best record. And they could be going out in the first round. I mean, that's the thing about the NHL playoffs. I love it. It will never happen. There's no way that a number one seed, rarely will you ever see a number one seed lose in the NBA playoffs. It's happened a couple times, but rare. Like, it doesn't happen often. Okay? NHL... You know, you're seeing lower seeds take out higher seeds all the time in the NHL. I mean, higher seeds, you're seeing eights take out ones, sevens take out twos. It happens on the regular. So that's the thing that you love about the NHL. Again, it was, my apologies, it was Anaheim. Anaheim beat Dallas. So to my NHL audience, again, I only watch the postseason. Okay, to my NHL audience. Those of you are listening, I only watch the postseason. I don't even watch the regular season. I watch the postseason. But so far, you've had some good games, great games. Chicago, a couple of nights ago, Chicago and St. Louis. Again, that's the thing about the NHL. You have that doesn't compare in terms of comparing to the NBA. Chicago, St. Louis is a series where you have two teams meeting in the first round who could win the Stanley Cup. Those are two Stanley Cup caliber teams meeting in the first round. You don't see that in the NBA. You'll see. I mean, you just don't. So, Chicago, St. Louis have game two today. Also, Columbus versus Pittsburgh. We'll see if Pittsburgh can, get back to the Stanley Cup. It's been 5 years since they've been in the Stanley Cup, since they last won Stanley Cup back in 2009. They lead their series 1-0. St. Louis leads their series 1-0. But, again, don't be surprised if Detroit takes out Boston. It would not be shocking in the least bit if Detroit takes out Boston. I mean, the Detroit Red Wings are the last team that I would want to see if I were a top seed. But that was certainly the case with the Boston Bruins. Mike Woodson, and this is the funny thing about the Mike Woodson situation. Mike Woodson, of course, he should now be called the former head coach of the New York Knicks because everybody knows he's getting fired. But, I don't know, maybe because it's the Easter weekend. They want Mike to enjoy one last Easter as the head coach of the Knicks before he gets fired. But here's a headline I read on Mike Woodson. Woodson's fate due next week. like we don't know that Mike Woodson's on his way out of New York. I mean, come on. Like, that is the worst – that's worst kept secret in sports. There's no way. When Phil Jackson got signed on to be the president of everything for New York Knicks, that's when Mike Woodson should have started polishing his resume for assistant coaching jobs. Not head coaching jobs, but assistant coaching jobs for next year. I mean, you're talking about two different philosophies. It's oil and water. With those two, Phil Jackson respects Mike Woodson as a coach. He's being a former head coach, but that's where it stops. There's no way even the Knicks would have made the playoffs. There's no way that Mike Woodson was going to be back as the head coach for 2014-2015 season. It just wasn't going to happen. Phil Jackson's going to bring in probably Steve Kerr, and there you go. So just get on with it already. I would have fired him. Like, dude, this is what I love about the NFL. NFL, there's none of this stuff going on, none of this speculation going on in NFL once the season ends. NFL is called Black Monday for a reason. Guys who are, you know, who are going to get fired, they're fired. Season ends on a Sunday, you're going to get fired on that Monday, period. There's no, there's no speculation. There's not, well, you know, what about this, what about that? No. Have a nice, you know, appreciate your services. See ya. Moving on to the next. So I don't know what the holdup is for. Maybe it happens on Monday or Tuesday. I don't know what, you know, why this process, you know, the season ended Wednesday, okay? Season ended Wednesday. Woodson should have been fired Thursday. You could have fired him before Easter. And Good Friday. If you would have fired him on Thursday, you could have got this over with. You could have, I mean, you know, you're still getting paid. You're not going to ruin his holiday with taking money out of his bank account. You're still getting paid. So, Woodson, everybody knows Woodson's gone from the Knicks. Steve Kerr is going to be the coach. I like Steve Kerr. I think Steve Kerr will do a good job for the Knicks. I think, you know, he knows the league, been on championship teams. Obviously, intimately knows Phil Jackson's system, his philosophy, triangle offense, played in triangle offense. So I think he'll do a good job. Obviously, the Knicks have a lot of work to do in regards to, you know, tweaking that roster. Also, dealing with Carmelo, so they have a number of stuff they got to deal with. But you have Phil Jackson. They are headed in the right direction. 347-215-6180 is your call number. An incredible story in Major League Baseball. We'll talk about that and much, much more on this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. We'll be right back. Edition of the Cyril Quinn Review, 347-215-6180. I'm shocked. I shouldn't be shocked, but I'm surprised that the Hawks Pacers series is getting, you know, basically national TV, some national TV burn. That to me, that was a series that was going to be just made for just NBA TV. I guess ESPN had to have a fourth game. You know, I guess like. I'm shocked that series is going to be prime time 7 p.m. tonight. That series has, and it will, I guarantee you, it will make an NBA TV appearance. I promise you it will before the week is out. But the fact that that series is going to be on ESPN for the first game is, you know, I didn't expect it to be honest with you. So, I mean, Indiana, you're going to get to see Indiana and Atlanta on ESPN, but That series has, again, you, knowing, I mean, the only intrigue that it does have is, again, to watch the Pacers. You're watching, see, I mean, maybe, you know, maybe Atlanta does give them a series. I doubt it. But you're watching the Pacers, but that's a series that's a tough watch. And, you know, the Indiana Atlanta series is a very, very tough watch. I mean, as a matter of fact, all the playoff series in the first round, that probably between that and I guess the San Antonio and Dallas series is not going to be an easy watch because San Antonio's going to kill them. Those are the two playoff series that you kind of want to skip watching if you had your choice. And I'll watch them all, but those two is going to be going to be tough to watch. And that's even tougher because at least in San Antonio's execution is great. They're fundamentally sound. So you'll appreciate the quality of basketball that's played by San Antonio, even if they're destroying their opponent. But, you know, that Indiana-Atlanta series, you're going to have some 78-65. I mean, that series, this would be the first one to 80, that particular series. Yasiel Puig, of course, plays for the Dodgers, and, you know, if you haven't read his story on how he got to America and what he had to deal with, it is a, and listen, I don't give ESPN credit that often, so, but when I do, when credit is deserved, I do give it, like the 30 for 30 they did with Detroit Pistons, which I will talk about later. Did an excellent job. But this story on the ESPN, it was written by ESPN Magazine. It was a tremendous piece on Yasiel Puig's journey to America and what he had to go through as a Cuban defector. I'm not going to get into all the details of it. It's a lot. It's a long article. But basically, listen, this guy is, you know, basically his life was on the line at times during this whole process, and it's a situation where you understand, after reading it, you will understand why he is who he is, and you'll understand his behavior and some of his actions through reading this article. Like, this kid, you know, he's 22, 23 years old. He is just happy to be playing baseball. He's just happy to be here in America. And it's something that we as Americans take for granted. You know, we complain about, you know, the economy, complain about the school system. We complain about a lot as Americans. But, you know, I don't think any of us had to, you know, go through crocodile-infested waters or, you know, had to be held up in a hotel room waiting for somebody to pay for us so we can come to America. I mean, again, unbelievable story. And, again, you're talking about a guy who has demonstrated, you know, he's demonstrated, you know, levels of immaturity during the course of his young career, and he's been disciplined for it. I mean, you know, he's late to a batting practice. Don Mattingly sits him. He'll do something on the field that makes you scratch your head. You know, he's not, again, this guy is a total, he's a raw, completely raw baseball player, but there's not a team in baseball that wouldn't want him on their particular team. Let's put you that way. That's how talented he is. But again, he's still a kid. And he's somebody who's happy-go-lucky. He's somebody who's still adapting to American culture. And I think that, you know, and I'm not trying to – he hasn't done anything off the field that would say, like, you know, he's not Alden Smith, okay? So I think after you've read this story, you will get, again, a better understanding, a better sense of who he is. Or why he does some of the things that he does. I mean, this is a guy who, again, is still even still learning the language. And I think, you know, I think we forget that when you have athletes who have to come over, who come from another country, have to make that transition, this whole culture shock. It's like America is unlike any other place in the world. We don't think that way because we're Americans and we're used to America, but, people come to America, it's like, whoa. Again, this guy defected from Cuba. During that journey that he had, he could have been killed at any time. He really could have been. He's almost in a way, some ways, he's fortunate to be alive. So, again, next time he goes out there and doesn't, misplays a fly ball, or, doesn't take a pitch, or gets thrown out stealing, try to steal second, remember that. Remember, he's only 22 years old, and remember, he's still just getting adjusted to life in America. Again, very fascinating piece in ESPN, the magazine, detailing the journey that Yasiel Puig had to go through, and the others around him as well. But, he's the big fish amongst the group of people that were with him in terms of when he defected from Cuba. I hear a lot of criticism that he's been getting, immature, not a team player, not fundamentally sound, and like he's 22, 23 years old. Like, this guy is still learning how to play baseball. He's still learning how to play baseball. Right now, he's doing what he's performing strictly basically on raw guy given ability, and he has a ton of it. And the guy is 6'3, 240 pounds. He's a freak of nature for a baseball player. But read that. I encourage you to read that piece again. Not that often that I toss ESPN bones or bouquets, but I give credit when credit's due. 347-215-6180 is your call number. When we return, we'll talk about last night's and also Major League Baseball news and notes as well. That's coming up on this latest edition of the Ciro Gwynn Review. We'll be right back. Is your call number on this latest edition of the Ciro Gwynn Review. Of course, last night you have the Atlanta Braves again just doing what they do, and that's just win. They shut out Philadelphia 6-0 as Aaron Harang flirts with a no-hitter. Atlanta lost basically 3/5 of its starting rotation. Okay. 2/5 of the starting rotation, and then another key relief pitcher, the second best relief pitcher in Johnny Venters. And they just keep rolling. I mean, they replace guys, or they'll pick up a guy like Aaron Harang, who, probably anybody in baseball could have had Aaron Harang. It wasn't a hot commodity during the wintertime, during the offseason. They get Aaron Harang, and all of a sudden, Aaron Harang just, pitching as well as he's ever pitched. it's remarkable that the Braves keep going. And, again, if you're a Washington Nationals fan, that team is not going anywhere over the next 100 and whatever, however, like 45 games that's left in all in baseball. A team's not going anywhere. They're going to be there. They're going to, I mean, the Nationals are going to have to fight through, going to have to go through Atlanta. They want to win the division. And maybe you have to go through them if they even want to get to the playoffs, possibly, depending on what happens in the other divisions in terms of how many teams, you know, in terms of what the number is going to be for the wild card. But it doesn't matter. Injuries, no injuries, year in, year out, that team is always there. You know, they haven't won up now. It hasn't produced championships, but they always give themselves a chance, and that's all you want. You know, if you root for a team, that's all you want from your team is a chance to win. Good win for the Nationals last night, 3-1 over at St. Louis after getting smacked around on Thursday, 8-0 and dominated by Adam Wainwright. I think this is an important series, early series for the Nationals. Now, again, I understand the Nationals are beat up. You know, no Ramos, no Zimmerman, Denard Span. They have a number of injuries that they're dealing with, which are not major injuries. Stuff that you know, they should be right by Memorial Day or early June in terms of getting these guys back. But at some point, you know, the Nationals are going to have to beat some good teams. I mean, over the past couple of years, in particular last year, they really struggled against playoff caliber teams. They need to get you would like, if you're a Nationals fan, to get 3 out of 4 against St. Louis, but St. Louis is, you know, we know how good St. Louis is. You'll take a split. I mean, you will take a split. And listen, if you're a good baseball team, that's all you want to do if you're a quality team. You want to beat up on the bad teams and go .500 against the good teams. But the Nationals, they beat up on the bad teams, and they beat up on bad teams and are a mediocre team against the good teams. That's how they were last year. So big series for the Nationals. We'll see if they can get at least another game in their home ballpark. Again, they got off the schneid last night with a 3-1 victory. 10-7 on the season. So, you know, still right there as far as the division goes with the Atlanta Braves. Giants lose another one-run game. It's amazing how many one-run games the Giants play. It's just, I think this will be their fourth straight one-run game. They played a couple against Colorado last week, too. So they're good news if you're a Giants fan. That means your pitching has been good. Their pitching has been good. They lose 2-1 to San Diego, but the Giant pitching has been better. Starting pitching has been better this year, so that's good news last year for this year if you're a Giant fan. Albert Pujols connects for home run number 497. Nobody cares about Albert Pujols and home run number 500, despite the fact that Albert Pujols has no ties whatsoever to steroids. No one cares. I mean, you should care, because .500 is legitimate. Is still a big number. Unless you've been put into that steroid mix, that group of players who use steroids, you know, you get 500 home runs. It's a big deal. I think Albert Pujols should be given a ton of credit. Once he gets the 500 home runs, he's done it clean. Again, no mention of steroids. You haven't seen a guy whose body has changed, nothing like that. But, again, he's probably going to get to 500 home runs in the next couple of weeks. And it's going to go like, okay, you'll see, they'll do a quick 5-minute segment on it, and that'll be it. It won't be any ceremony. It won't be, you know, the commissioner won't be there, nothing like that. So, certainly find that interesting, just to say the least. Of course, this past week you had the celebration, rightfully so, of Jackie Robinson breaking the color barrier in Major League Baseball. All the teams, either on April 15th or April 16th, if they weren't scheduled to play, April 15th wore number 42 in honor of the late and great Jackie Robinson, who. Certainly, and that the term hero gets tossed around entirely too much in sports and in entertainment, but you know, he was genuinely a hero without question. And of course, every time we get to this point with Jackie Robinson Day and celebration, the conversation of lack of African Americans always gets brought up in terms of lack of African Americans who are playing baseball. And I think the number at this point was like 8.5%. It might even be lower than that. Listen, and I understand Major League Baseball has these different programs and RBI, and you know they're bringing in, you know, they Hank Aaron is talking about different programs, Jerry Manuel talking about different programs and what can be done to help generate interest from African Americans. If you really, if baseball, to me, is window dressing, because that's just baseball saying, all right, at least we're doing something. It's not it hasn't been productive. It hasn't helped generate more interest amongst African Americans in terms of playing baseball. Just go look at the numbers. If you really want to generate interest and encourage more participation amongst African Americans, you have to be real. You have to be honest. You know, explain. And I'm joking, but I'm serious at the same time. All you got to do is say, hey, listen. You have to sell your sport. You're like, look, nobody cares about Babe Ruth. A 10-year-old doesn't even know who Babe Ruth is. Okay, let's be honest. They don't even know who Barry Bonds is. So stop trying to, don't sell the history and it's a great game. Say, look, out of all the four major sports, our sport can provide you with the most money. Okay. Albert Pujols just signed a 10-year, $240 million contract. Okay. You got to sell your sport. I mean, all young people, everybody likes money. I mean, just tell them, listen, you know how much money Alex Rodriguez has made over the course of his career? You can make the most money in our sport, and you can play the longest. Maybe I think basketball players on average make more than baseball players, but they don't play, but their careers are not as long. You don't have to worry about concussions, or you don't have to worry about your career ending early. I mean, you have to sell. I mean, you have to go out. And again, it's outside the box, but if you're serious, and that's the key thing. That's the key to this whole thing. If you're really serious about generating interest about wanting more black players in Major League Baseball, you got to go outside the box. Because what you've been doing over the past 5, 6, 10 years isn't working. It's clearly not working. What's the definition of doing the same thing, getting the same result? What, insanity? Yeah, it's insanity. But every year around again, when we celebrate Jackie Robinson's breaking the color barrier, why are African Americans not in baseball? What's going on? This is a problem. Like, come on. In baseball, I mean, again, baseball, I frankly think baseball could care less about, and I'm not saying baseball is racist, but I just don't, I think that the game is so popular now, they're making money hand over foot. I mean, the talent, you know, the quality of play is high. So really baseball is not affected by a lack of African-American participation. It's not, I'll be honest with you. There are a number of great Hispanic, Latino, and white players. I mean, that's all there is to it. I mean, Mike Trout, best player in baseball. He's white. Miguel Cabrera, best player, best hitter in baseball. He's Latino. So, that's all there is to it. Andrew McCutchen, great player. MVP last year, and he's black, but he's one of the few African Americans who do play, let alone quality players. But he's one of the few who play. But again, baseball—if you really want more participation, you kind of have to go outside the box. and changed how you're going about generating more how you're going about, you know, you have to sell your sport to these young kids. You have to sell your sport. 347-215-6180 is your call number on this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. When we return, we'll talk about the 30 for 30 special Detroit Pistons. We'll talk about that and much, much more on this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. We'll be right back. Is your call number on this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review as we discuss the world of sports, a busy weekend with both NHL and NBA playoffs, NHL playoffs in gear, well in gear. You'll have a ton of NBA over the next couple of weeks, and particularly with the first round. You're going to get basically four games a day, close to four games at night, four games a night. Again, a lot of there are a couple series, that, of course, in the Western Conference. You know, the Golden State Clippers series should be interesting. A lot of people are going to be into that Oklahoma City Memphis series. I don't think it's going to be as close as people would think it's going to be, but, you know, that's certainly these two teams, you know, have met. This will be the third time in 4 years that these two teams have met, so they know each other very well. We have that. The Houston-Portland series should be very entertaining. It'll probably be first to 115 and first to 120 in terms of how that series goes. So, again, you knew the Western Conference, how good the Western Conference was going to be in terms of playoffs, even in the first round. Again, the Eastern Conference, I think that Eastern Conference looks better than what we originally thought about, because because of the fact that both Indiana and Miami are not as good as they were mid-season. And considering that there are some vulnerabilities, especially with Indiana, more so than Miami, it adds some juice to the Eastern Conference playoffs. The Washington-Chicago series should be a very good series. A lot of people are high on Chicago. I'll tell you, I'm not as high on Chicago as a lot of people are, but still, that should be a fun series to watch. Toronto-Brooklyn should be a lot of fun to watch as well. ESPN did a 30-for-30 on, and I'm glad they did it because this team was, to me, was a underrated dynasty, as far as I'm concerned, on the Bad Boy Pistons. Of course, it was led by Isaiah Thomas, Joe Dumars, Dennis Rodman, and company, and of course, it was coached by the late and great Chuck Daly, tremendous Hall of Fame coach that he was. That team, you know, again, in the pantheon of NBA history, they had one of the great runs in the last 25 years. And the reason why, now, you know, the Bulls get talked about, the Lakers get talked about, the Celtics, Spurs, and rightfully so. All those teams in the last 25, 30 years get talked about, dynasties and great teams and the Hall of Famers. That Piston, none of those teams had to deal with what the Pistons teams had to deal with in the 80s in terms of who they had to go through and what they had to go through. I'm talking about on the court. I'm not talking about, strictly talking about on the court. Now, again, I understand the media was nowhere. The coverage was not, media scrutiny is not even close to what it was, to what it is now today. No Twitter, Facebook, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, whatever. That stuff wasn't around in the 80s. But in terms of competition, you know, they had to deal with Bird Celtics, Magic Lakers, and Michael's Chicago Bulls. Bird, Magic, and Jordan. Think about that. I'm not even counting some of those Milwaukee teams that were very good and underrated, didn't win championships, but were good teams. You know, the Hawks with Dominic. People forget how good the Hawks were. They just came along in the wrong era. That's when the Eastern Conference actually was good, when you think about it. That might be the last time the Eastern Conference was good. I mean, seriously. I mean, well, 80s and mid-90s as well. It started slipping when the Bulls, I think when Jordan's last championship was the downfall of the Eastern Conference, the Bulls' last championship back in 98. And the East has sucked ever since as a whole. But, those Piston teams, you know, that 5 years they had, you know, 87-91, they go to 5 straight conference finals. They win back-to-back championships. They go to 3 straight NBA finals. Easily could have won a title in 88, if not for, suspect call in game 6 with the phantom foul. That was not a foul. I'm a Laker fan. The foul on Kareem with Lambert it was so tough. It was like if that call would have got called today, Twitter would have blown up, would literally blow up if that call was made. That was as bad as the Ramil Robinson phantom foul in the 89 national championship with Seton Hall, Michigan. I mean, that again, a foul that nobody saw but the official. So they lose, and Isaiah Thomas with the bad ankle, of course. You know, played, who was heroic in game 6. Game 7, he had nothing left. So they lose that. But, you know, again, thinking about the fact that they owned Michael Jordan and the Bulls 3 straight. I mean, it's one thing to beat somebody twice back-to-back years. But they took out the Bulls 3 straight years. I mean, but when the Bulls called him in 91, the Pistons at that point were done. It was physically met. They were done. The rain was over. But, again, just an incredible run. 5 years at conference final at high level, making it to the conference finals, I found that I did not know that Adrian Dantley had become a cancer on the team, basically. Like the whole Adrian Dantley thing. I mean, as a kid, I wasn't about 8, 9, 10 years old, so I wasn't kind of paying attention to that. But that was a good. I liked that part of the program. Again, a underrated dynasty as far as I'm concerned. There's no question that that they should be considered a dynasty. And again, they are so much better than these one hit wonder teams that have won championships. These teams that have won, that haven't won multiple championships, or that won only one championship during the last 25 years, like the Houston Rockets team. They're much better. They are a much better team than that Houston Rockets team. As good as Olajuwon was, they're a much better team than that team was. They're better than the 2006 Miami Heat team, much better than that team. They're obviously much better than the Dallas team that won a championship a couple of years ago. So the non-Laker, San Antonio Spurs, Chicago Bulls teams, yeah, the Detroit Pistons, they're better than even 2008 Celtics. Very good team, but not as good as the Detroit Pistons team. So that team deserves to be mentioned amongst the greatest teams of all time. And, again, that team, offensively, again, much better offensive team than what they ever get credit for. Yeah, they play great defense, but you look at their scores. Look at how many points they were putting up. They could score as well. They had a lot of talent offensively. You had Isaiah. You had Dumars. You had Vinny Johnson, who could score. Adrian Dantley could score. Aguirre, when they traded, when they got him, he could score. So they had a number. They had great. They are a very skilled basketball team. That was just, they were thugs. They were thugs. Without question. They were intelligent thugs. They knew how to play the game. They knew how to get into their opponents' heads, and they did it. They turned it into an art form. But again, some of the fouls. It's amazing how much the game has changed, because some of that stuff that they were doing, that was going on in the NBA, just wouldn't today. In today's NBA, if you sneeze on a person, it's a foul. It's almost swung into the absolute wrong direction as far as just the NBA is too soft right now, for my liking. Now, you don't want it to go back to where it was with the Knicks in the early 90s when games were like 85 to 70, 75, 72. No, you don't want to go back. You don't want it to go back to that. But, there's nothing wrong with physical play. It really isn't. There's nothing wrong with physical play, especially in the postseason. 347-215-6180 is the call number on this latest edition of the Cyril Coleman Review. Before we go to break, of course, Jabari Parker decides what you thought he was going to decide. That was to go pro. So he basically just saved a lot of teams some heartache. He chose to stay at Duke. Teams that were tanking for nothing. I mean, can you imagine like a Sixers or a Milwaukee, having to maybe possibly get a Marcus Smart or somebody who's a good player, but certainly Jabari Parker will be selected no later than two. I think he could go number one. I think Wiggins probably will go number one, but Parker is certainly a top two, top three. Depending on the team, I mean, Embiid could go two if he gets cleared from a health standpoint. He could go two or maybe even one. But Parker, right now is ready to play NBA basketball offensively. I mean, offensively right now, he's probably the most NBA-ready player that there's out of that group of freshmen coming out and out of that group, that young group coming out with Smart, Wiggins, Tyler Ennis, Joel Embiid. So out of that group, Parker, without question, is the most NBA ready. Still to come on this latest edition of the Cyril Coleman Review, we'll talk about the playoffs. We'll go through each. We'll go through the series that count. I'm not going to talk about Miami. I mean Atlanta, Indiana, or San Antonio, Dallas. We know the outcomes of those particular series, so we'll talk about the other series and talk about what to look for in those particular series. That's coming up on this latest edition of the Serial Quinn Review. Before we get to that, we have a special guest to join us to help us break down the NBA playoffs. Lauren, how are you doing this morning?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing fine. Lauren Beasley joins the program to help us dissect the NBA playoffs. Of course, finally, after 82 games in 6 months, we got to this point. Lauren, you look at these matchups. First of all, can you explain to me, if you're the Brooklyn Nets, and you know there was a lot of talk about them resting their players and them trying to avoid the Chicago Bulls. To me, if I'm Brooklyn, I'm not thinking about just avoiding Chicago Bulls. I'm thinking about avoiding the Miami Heat. Yes, they avoided the Miami Heat, but they're going to be playing Toronto, which won't be easy, and having to match up against Miami in the second round. Can you explain to me why they would do that instead of just playing Chicago in the first round and staying away from Miami at least until the conference finals?
You can never truly guess what's going on in the minds of those guys. I mean, a part of me thinks that this is not the same. When I think about Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce, it was kind of surprising at first when I kept hearing these reports, we don't want to play Chicago, we're trying to avoid Chicago, because I'm thinking, you guys come from Celtic territory. You guys are used to tough, rough basketball, and I think a little bit of it, kind of frustrates them when they play Chicago because Chicago is very defensive-oriented, similar to how Boston was and Doc Rivers was there the last few years. They're also very tough. They're very physical. And I don't think that's something that Brooklyn enjoys. Not to say Miami can't be physical, but we all know that's kind of not Miami's MO. Miami's never been like that team we look at and say, oh, yeah, they're so physical. They're so tough. They're so great defensively. That's kind of been Chicago's identity. And then the Pacers have grown in the last 2 years. We kind of say that about them. Oh, they're very physical. They're very defensive-oriented. So I think this is just about them feeling like, we don't want to go up against all that crazy physicality. These guys can play rough. These guys can play tough. We want to go up against the Heat. And then sometimes I think it's just that vendetta back with Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce. These guys are not big fans of the Heat no matter what jersey they're in, and I don't think that that's changed. But I do agree with what you said. This is still going to be a hard first round for them because Toronto is not a team to play with.
I mean, I kind of opened up my eyes. It does somewhat make sense. Chicago's very physical, and then you would have, Chicago's an extremely physical team, and then you would have Indiana, and then you probably might not have nothing left for the Eastern Conference Finals. So from that standpoint, I kind of can get it. But to me, the way Indiana has just dipped, I would want to play Indiana. In the second round, if I had a choice between playing Indiana and Miami, I certainly would rather play Indiana right now. But again, we're talking about a team that, feels come there. I mean, this is what makes Brooklyn dangerous for Miami. This is talking about a team that is comfortable with playing the Miami Heat. Might be the only team in the league that's comfortable, other than the Spurs, that's comfortable playing the Miami Heat. So you can go either way with it. But looking at the Western Conference, I mean, and we'll get to the West. Looking at the Eastern Conference, how concerned are you about Miami and where they at right now, or do you think they just have the on and off switch that they can go to at any time?
I don't necessarily think that they have an on and off switch. I think they just understand when it's time to turn it up, when it's time to maybe, just slow down. I said they don't take losses seriously and things like that, but I think they have finally understood kind of what the regular season is all about and how to use it properly to fit them, not everybody else. And I think that's the biggest thing. I still think they're going to have some tough games. I'm not saying that they're going to sweep Charlotte, even though this should not go past five games. I at least think Charlotte could get one win. But to me, with the Heat, they know what they need to do. They've won it before. They've won it twice. they know what it takes. Actually, they've won it more than that. But they've won it twice in the last, obviously, two seasons. So he know what it takes. It's just a matter of them not underestimating anybody and making a point to treat every team the same, which is with that competitive attitude. But I think the only thing standing in the Heat's way of getting back to the finals is the Heat. There's no reason, even if the Pacers were playing better, I would still say the same thing, because even though if the Pacers are playing great basketball right now, it's still the Heat time as far as I'm concerned, because my thing is with the Heat, you have the experience. You have everything for the most part that you need. The only thing you really lack for the most part is the post game. And you guys have lacked that for the last 2-3 years, and that hasn't stopped you. So my thing with the Heat is, again, just keep that killer instinct mentality, treat every team with that same competitive edge, and remember how you got to the finals in the first place. And there's nothing stopping the Heat except the Heat.
How about this Chicago-Washington series? Is a very, to me, which probably to me is the most fascinating of the first round series in the Eastern Conference. Two evenly matched teams. Washington, great offensive team, very good offensive team. Yeah, Chicago, of course, a great defensive team. A lot of people are high on Chicago. I'm not as high on Chicago as everybody else is. I think Washington's going to win the series myself. But how about that matchup? How about that matchup for the Washington Wizards, the young Washington Wizards?
It's going to be a great matchup. This is one of those series that I think probably will go about 7 games, just because of what you just said. Two, you know, young teams, you know, both teams kind of have their veteran leadership and then they have their young pieces. But I definitely think this is going to be an intense one just because of those young pieces. You got the perimeter versus the perimeter when you're talking about guys like John Wall and Bradley Beal. You got Jimmy Butler on this side. It's too bad Derrick Rose can't play, but I understand he's getting himself healthy. And then, of course, you got the big post battle, whether that be, you know, with Nene in the middle versus Joakim Noah. All those things are going to be huge. But a part of me is still kind of sticking with the Bulls. And the only reason I'm sticking with the Bulls in this is just because the Bulls offensively really have improved on the offensive side of the ball, jumping from 97 points per 100 possessions to 103 points per possession. The Bulls are also ranked third in opponent's three-point percentage. And I want to say they're first in points allowed per 100 possessions since the All-Star break. So this is a team right now who I feel is really growing offensively, and that's what I really like. And the main thing I also like about the Bulls is they still keep that defense, slugfest mentality going on, and I think that's what's going to be the key thing that helps them. If you can slow down, to me, Chicago's defense, if they can slow down the Wizards' backcourt, to me, then they're going to have a better chance of winning. I'm going with Chicago just because they know what it takes. This is important to them. They're treating this like no different. Their whole thing is we're going to compete just like we did last year. We're trying to go all the way, even if it's without Derrick Rose. Even though we know our chances are pretty much out the window, we want to compete. And I'm not sure if Washington's there yet. So I think this will be a 7-game series, but I think Chicago will come out on top.
And those stats sound good. And I like, you know, points per possession. Here's a question I would ask you. Two minutes ago, fourth quarter, who's the closer for Chicago?
Who's going to be the closer? Oh, man, that's a tough choice of the day. You know, who would be the closer for Chicago? I guess it would all depend, honestly, just on who he feels can take the shot. You know, who he feels. I mean, probably think they automatically still go to Carlos Boozer in a lot of post situations just because he's that veteran guy. After that, I mean, you can take your pick. That's really the problem. You can take your pick after that. Do I want to give Butler a chance? I don't think he would give it to Noah, but he may. You know, do I want to give him a chance? Do I want to give him a chance to maybe lead this team to victory? But right now, to me, it's still Carlos Boozer who gets that last shot point to me. Jimmy Butler and those guys, they're growing, but I don't know if they've grown into that fully. Only other guy I could possibly see, just because he's not afraid to take the big shot he showed it at the college level, is Jimmy Fredette.
That's the issue. When you're talking about Jimmy Fredette taking all the shots, that's the issue I have with Chicago. I don't think they have a closer. And I think that when you get into the postseason at this time of year, you know, all these teams who are trying to advance need closers. Look at all the good teams. I mean, you know, you have Oklahoma City, Durant, even, you know, San Antonio, Parker, Duncan, you know, LeBron, Wade. All these teams have all these championship caliber teams. And you know, we know Chicago, neither one of these teams are championship caliber teams, but even Washington, I mean, Bradley Beal will take a big shot. John Wall will take a big shot. And those are, I mean, they might not make them all the time, but they will take, I know that those guys will take big shots. Ariza, which has championship experience, will take a big shot. I'm not sure 3 minutes left in the game, that Chicago has those guys, has offensive guys that scare you. I kind of think that people are over. I mean, and then they can easily win this series because home court defense. But I kind of think that we've gotten to the point where they're somewhat overrated a little bit based on the fact that they're easy to root for. They play great defense. We know Thibodeau is a big time coach. I think their offensive style doesn't match up for the playoffs. And I think they struggle to score points. They're gonna, like Washington at worst will be in every game. These games are going to be close games because Chicago's not going to blow anybody out. So
I agree with the fact that, this is going to be a tough series. Like I said, my thing is with Washington, you've never been here. And that's my biggest thing. Yes, do they have people who can take the shot? Absolutely, they have people who can take the shot. But like you said, can you make the shot? Chicago has shown last year, we can get here, we can get past the next round. We're not trying to win. Chicago, you're not trying to believe, we're trying to go all the way. They know they're not going all the way. Their biggest thing is we want to compete, and we want to prove people wrong, and we want to continue just to show everybody that we can continue to compete without Derrick Rose. And once Derrick Rose gets back, hopefully they make some better decisions this offseason concerning that starting five, we'll be ready to go. I do agree that it's going to be interesting to see with these close games who takes the last shot. But like you said, it's not just about who takes the last shot, but who makes the last shot. Like I said, Chicago knows about these moments. They know about these close series, no matter we're talking Heat, no matter whether we're talking, just a scrub team in the first round. It doesn't matter. They know about these series. They know how to win. For Washington, this is going to be a learning experience. And it's not to say you can't win in your first learning experience. But to me, that's going to be maybe one of the deciding factors in this. I know Washington have guys who can hit the shots. But guys, with Washington, do you understand that hostile environment in Chicago when you're on the road and you're playing in the playoff environment? Guys in Washington, do you understand when maybe you're down and Chicago has a 10-point lead on you that you still have a chance and that you still can get back in this? These are things that Chicago has already experienced as a playoff team. Washington hasn't yet. And like I said, it's not to say that they won't win. It's just to say these are the things that concern me when I'm watching. Regardless of the situation, though, I could honestly not. I don't really care who wins regardless. Chicago wins, hey, great for y'all. If Washington wins, hey, I'm very happy for you guys, too. I picked both of them to be in the playoffs. I didn't think they were going to have to go head-to-head at time, but then that's when I picked Chicago to make it out there and Rose still be healthy. So for me, it really doesn't matter because I think all y'all will end up losing eventually anyway for the most part. So my thing is, Washington, you have a chance, but you have to show me that you can beat out that senior leadership, that senior experience of the Chicago Bulls, because they have it, Washington doesn't. And like I said, sometimes that can make a difference regardless of if it's a Chicago team, even though I don't feel it's anything overrated about them. But I know you said overrated. I don't know where the overrated line came from, but
no, I just think that people. I think that people are higher on them than they should be. Like, I think, nobody wants to play Chicago. Nobody wants to play Chicago. If I were Brooklyn, if I were, even Washington, I would want to Chicago is a much better matchup for Washington than say playing Toronto. Like, they just may match up better against Chicago than they did Toronto. If you watch the course of the regular season, if you just watch the individual matchups. So I think that, the thing about playing Chicago, I would want to play Chicago from the standpoint of the fact that they don't have a closer and they can't mm-hmm. score. So it's still, these playoffs, it still comes down to getting buckets. Down the stretch. So that's why I think Chicago's kind of, everybody just has this fear factor of Chicago. I'm like, they're good, they're a solid team, but they're not an elite team. I mean, they're not a championship. I wouldn't be fearful of playing them if I were Brooklyn, if I were, Washington we know Indiana, Miami are not fearful of them, but I'm saying I wouldn't be fearful. I just don't. Chicago just doesn't scare me if I'm another team, as much as people think we should be scared of them.
I mean, I don't think anybody thinks you should be scared of them. Like I said, I think it honestly just, like I said, first off, Brooklyn is a fragile team with their little senior citizens who are Dangonier and Walkers with Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett. I don't think they feel like, we can take this physicality right now of Joaquin Noah, Taj Gibson, being, because they're going to be physical. And I think that's one of the things with Brooklyn. Brooklyn's had enough injuries to, you know, to suffice them for 2-3 seasons already. So I think a lot of that is just the physicality. I don't think it's a fear factor. I think it's just, you know what, we know what works for us and we know what doesn't. I think that's what it is. I don't think anybody's saying, oh, they're an elite team, they're an offensive team. I think people just know that mentality of Chicago because everybody, again, said last year, oh, Chicago's not going to compete. What's the point? And they go right out there like Derrick Rose is on the floor. They go big. They go physical. They go strong. They play that defense. And sometimes teams are like, we just don't want to even deal with that physicality. We don't want to deal with that environment. We know that they have a chip on their shoulder every year, whether they have their roles on the floor or not. You know, teams like Toronto and Washington, yeah, matchup-wise, it probably could be a little bit better for you, or it could be better. But at the same time, they look at it too. Yeah, you know what, we may have some different matchup issues with y'all than we will with Chicago. Yeah, y'all probably can score more than Chicago, but y'all never been here before. We're looking at y'all like, okay, yeah, y'all might have some good situations, but y'all never been here before. Y'all don't necessarily know what it takes yet. Y'all learning the experience. We've been here 3-4 years. We know what it takes to win. Chicago knows what it takes to win. Chicago understands how to play us and how they know us no different than we know them. With them playing Toronto, playing a Washington, their whole thing is, I think, and this is just my personal opinion, they're looking at it as, yes, we got to learn you, but you got to learn us too. And we have the experience factor over you. As well with Chicago, these teams know each other like the back of their hand. They know you guys. They played you guys. The only difference is, for the most part, y'all just got a couple new teammates and y'all some new uniforms. They know that. And like I said, I think that physicality bothers a lot of teams. So I don't think they consider them to be elite. I think their whole thing is just, we don't want to have to deal with Chicago if we don't have to. Let's just hope Washington knocks them out the park, and then we can deal with them in the next round if we get an opportunity.
How about the Toronto-Brooklyn series? You have a couple questions. One, is Brooklyn going to be able to get anything from KG? KG out is in terms of playoffs in general, especially in this series. And two, is Toronto just happy to be here? Certainly you like Brooklyn's experience, their size, even though I think the point guard matchup favors Toronto. So what are your thoughts on that particular series?
That's another series that could potentially go 7 games, which is, again, why I'm loving the playoffs this year, because you have teams who want to compete. And honestly, I think Toronto is not just happy to be here. I think Toronto, one of their goals was to get here, but I think Toronto is taking this seriously in the sense of, we want to compete. I know back in March, I want to say Terrence Ross actually said he wanted a first-round matchup, if my memory serves me correctly, with the Brooklyn Nets. Now, he said it was for development, because I think he wanted to work on his pick and rolls and whatnot. But at the same time, he, again, wants to play this team, and I think this team is excited to play Brooklyn. I agree the point guard matchup is really going to be one of the areas to watch, especially with sometimes the inconsistency of Deron Williams and then Kyle Lowry, who has just had a phenomenal season, especially when he's healthy. That's the biggest thing that I'm looking at, is the point guard matchup, because to me that's going to determine a lot of things. But I also agree with you, where KG is really going to have to step up in this sense. You know, KG, to me, I know it's the first round, and I'm not saying he has to go all the way off and go to KG mode, you know, but he does need to perform well, to me, in this series for this Nets team to be successful. They count on him for a lot of production, particularly in the post. I mean, he's also going to have to step up defensively when it comes to this series, as well as just doing the little things well, whether that means just getting a hand in the, during the passes when they're passing in the passing lane, whether that means, you know, running up and down the floor, little things like that. But I think the biggest thing for me that I'm really going to be watching, I know this starting five can go head-to-head, but whose bench is going to step up more so when the time comes? I think that's my biggest thing when I look at this matchup. Like I said, Brooklyn has a starting five that we know for the most part you can count on. Okay, you got Joe Johnson, you got Deron Williams, you got Kevin Garnett, you got Paul Pierce. You know, we know you have these guys. But on that start, after that starting five has to get rest because they're all dang on your senior citizens, who's going to step in and keep it going for you guys? Same thing, even more so with Toronto. Yeah, we know you got Kyle Lowry, you got DeMar DeRozan, Terrence Ross. These guys are beasts when they're on the floor. But even though they're young, they're still going to need some time to, you know, get situated. This is their first playoff experience. They're going to be playing a lot of minutes in some hostile environments, whether it's their own hostile environment or it's Brooklyn's hostile environment. And you have to be able to count on your bench to step in and say, okay, we got this for now. We'll keep the pace going, because that's how a lot of teams typically will lose to Boston as the series will go on. Back at times, the last 2 years, because once that bench came in, they couldn't handle it anymore. That bench wouldn't be able to keep up the pace, and now the starting five comes back in for whatever team is playing, and now they're fighting a losing battle. So I think those are going to be the key things.
I think eventually Brooklyn's experience will be the difference in that series. But like I said, would not be surprised if that's a six. Would not be surprised if that's a seven game series. I would take Brooklyn in six for that particular series. How about the Western Conference? Just toss aside the Dallas San Antonio series. I don't think it's going to be competitive at all. So put that aside. Put that on the shelf. How about the Clippers and Golden State, which might be the most entertaining first-round series in all the playoffs. What are your thoughts on that series? Can Golden State beat the Clippers without Andrew Bogut?
They can, but it's going to be extremely difficult. And really that's what bothers me right now with the Golden State Warriors. They're not going into this series really healthy. You got Andre Iguodala, I think he's battling through, I want to say, right knee tendonitis. Then you got Lee, who's playing with a nerve injury in his right hamstring. That's the area that really bothers me right now. These guys are not coming in healthy. It's one thing to come in healthy and then not come in necessarily, you know, with that win streak or come in hot. But to come in unhealthy and then not even be coming in necessarily with you playing your best basketball bothers me. And they can't go into this situation only counting on Stephen Curry and then Klay Thompson saying, oh, hey, you guys just go supernova with the threes and we're going to be able to win a seven-game series. And then it goes back to even what I said earlier with Toronto. Same thing with Golden State, that depth. Clippers, they don't have the best depth in the world, but they have depth. That's one of the things that makes them a better team this year, was when Blake Griffin goes out or Chris Paul has to go out. You can count on that Clippers depth, that depth of offensive weapons, who I think will prove at some point in this series too much for the Golden State Warriors. Like I said, it already hurts that they're not coming in here fully healthy. You're going to be playing, not against the most physical team, but we know Blake Griffin will get physical at times. We know DeAndre Jordan will get physical. Even Chris Paul, short self, will get physical. And that's not a good look for guys that are already injured who can break at any time. And like I said, Golden State doesn't really have great depth yet that I really feel like they can count on, which is one of the reasons I was worried about them this season anyway, because I said, you guys don't have necessarily the best step. You guys pretty much count on that starting five, and then you'll bring in, you know, with the exception of Harrison Barnes, everybody else, the guys who can kind of maybe, you know, set you up successfully, like your Jermaine O'Neal, like your Draymond Green, but these aren't the guys that the Clippers have who are true offensive weapons who can come in here firing threes, who can come in here start playing a lockdown defense, and that's what bothers me. So I think the Golden State Warriors can still give them a fight, but right now, as tough it is for me, I have the Clippers winning. I would really love for me to pick Golden State, but I just don't trust right now with all the injuries that I've seen or the possible injuries that could go down with Andre Iguodala and Lee already being slightly hurt and then the lack of depth that they can count on. I don't know if I trust them to beat the Clippers right now. But the Clippers at the same time have to prove to me, you know what, we're not playing this year. Like I said, it can't just be Chris Paul like it has been the last few years, and it can't just be Chris Paul and Blake Griffin. Everybody needs to step up. They say we're taking up this team seriously. We're taking this moment seriously. I want to see it. They have to show me. You have the options off your bench. You have the weapons defensively and offensively, and you have a great coach in Doc Rivers. Now it's time to go out here and show us all you guys weren't just blowing smoke up our butts, basically.
How about the Oklahoma City-Memphis matchup? Do you think this could be a long series, or are people overreacting to how good Memphis is, or can Oklahoma City finally, or can Oklahoma City end this quickly? You think this, what kind of series do you see with those two particular teams who have played each other a lot in the postseason recently?
For me,
Memphis score enough?
I guess
that's the question. Can they score enough to stay with Oklahoma City?
I think they can score, but if they're going to get a score enough, probably not. I don't think this is going to be a seven-game series. I could definitely see this at least being a six-game series, so I guess you consider that to be long. But, yeah, it could be kind of long. I think the main reason a lot of people are giving Memphis credit are for two reasons. And one of them is with Oklahoma City, and I feel the same way about Oklahoma City. I really don't care what Oklahoma City does at this point during the regular season. I haven't cared in the last 3 years. My thing is with Oklahoma City, show me that the right guys are going to step up at the right time, whether that's in the first round or whether that's in the finals if you actually get there. And I think that's one of the big things people are still kind of watching with Oklahoma City. Yeah, we know you have Kevin Durant, who's played phenomenal this year. Very proud of him and what he's accomplished. Congratulations to him. Then you have, you know, obviously Russell, who's every game getting more and more comfortable, you know, obviously since he missed some time. Great. You have those two guys. But it goes back to those other guys. Who else is going to step up on this team? That continues to be always the issue when you talk about the Oklahoma City Thunder. Yeah, everybody likes to blame a lot of it on Westbrook. Oh, he's trying to take over and stuff like that. And I get what they're saying at times, but it's not going to be about Kevin and Russell to me. Those are the guys to me you don't have to worry about. It's about everybody else on this team. Steve Adams, who I feel has had a pretty good rookie season. How is he going to fare in his first playoff experience? Reggie Jackson, how is he going to do? Fabio Cephalosha, how is he going to do? Hashim Thabeet, Perry Jones, guys like that, Jeremy Lamb. These are the guys that I'm going to be watching because these are the guys that get that playing time that they're going to be counting on to step up in defensive matchups, to step up in scoring. Serge Ibaka is another one that everybody's going to be counting on. And everybody always likes to talk about, oh, you guys have never traded James. You know what? They had no choice. They gave James money. James didn't want that money. They chose to take care of Serge Ibaka before they took care of James, and they didn't have enough money to suffice James. So you have Serge Ibaka, who you made a point to keep before James Harden. Serge Ibaka has yet to show me that he's earned that money. And I can say that about a lot of these role players as well. These guys, they continue to fall asleep and go away and get scared and run away in the playoffs. And that's one of the reasons I don't trust Oklahoma City fully until those guys step up. But I really think the other area that people are giving Memphis a lot of credit for, and this is where I think Memphis could give Oklahoma City some trouble, is the front court. You have the physicality of both Marcus Gasol, Debo, a.k.a. Zach Randolph, paired with I feel the underrated player of a Mike Conley, but more so just that Gasol and that Debo. Very physical, rebound the ball, play defense, score. They have that old-school mentality of post-game basketball, if you will. They're not necessarily as physical as, your Bill Laimbeers were back in the day, but they are very physical, and they do a little bit of everything. It's not, oh, we're just trying to score. It's not, oh, we're just trying to play defense. No, we're doing everything. And that's the area that I think a lot of people are kind of watching for Golden State, because we know Serge Ibaka, as young and athletic as he is, he tends to shy away from being physical. He tends to step away from, those big physical matchups, and that's part of the problem, both offensively and defensively. Steve Adams, yeah, he's been great, but at the same time, are you ready for this physicality? Yeah, we know you faced it during the season, but are you ready for it? And then those other guys that you're going to be counting off to come off the bench, got those type of moves, even Kendrick Perkins, things like that. Those are the areas that I think people are giving Memphis a little bit more credit and saying, well, you know what, you guys can't control Zeebo and Gasol. You could easily make this series harder on yourself than it has to be. But overall, I think Oklahoma City is going to win this series. But I still think it could go about 5 to 6 games. It's probably 6, probably is what I would bet right now, possibly 5. But I do agree the biggest question is also with Memphis, as much as it is with Oklahoma City, is who else is going to step up? Like I said, Zach Randolph and Gasol can only do so much. And I do feel like Mike Conley is probably one of the more underrated guards in the NBA, point guards in the NBA. But at the same time, it can't just be those three. It can't just be those three. And that's one of the things that continues to hold, in my opinion, the Grizzlies back. Tony Allen, he's strictly there for defense. You'll be lucky if he gets a layup. Tayshaun Prince, his time is over. Mike Miller, he's not the same Mike Miller that he once was. Courtney Lee has still been kind of struggling to find his way since this trade. Quincy Pondexter, these guys, they stepped up, but they're not consistent either. And I have to say, if I had to pick between Oklahoma City's bench and probably Memphis's bench, I would take Oklahoma City right now. So I think those are going to be the factors, but I think Oklahoma City will come out on top.
One last one real quick, because you got to run here. Does anybody stop San Antonio from winning a championship? I think they come into the playoffs as the odds-on favorite. Does anybody stop San Antonio? Do you think it's their year, or do you think that they, Miami, Oklahoma City? What are your thoughts on who plays in the finals and who wins it all?
I think it'll end up probably being San Antonio and the Thunder, or San Antonio and the Clippers at this point. For me, but I think San Antonio is in charge of their own destiny. But because of how San Antonio has continued to let me down. When it matters the most, I wouldn't be surprised if they actually lose in the Western Conference Finals, whether that be the Oklahoma City Thunder or whether that be to the L.A. Clippers or somebody entirely different. But at the same time, I'm choosing to go out on some faith here, and I'm choosing to go and have some faith in the younger team, which is Oklahoma City Thunder. I would like to see them go to the finals and actually compete. I thought it was a great series last time, but they didn't have the experience. Now they have the experience. They have the hunger. So I'm choosing to go that Oklahoma City Thunder will go to the Western Conference Finals and beat Spurs, and I think that's ultimately who will be in the finals this year for the Western Conference, and I think Oklahoma City can make it past San Antonio. and go to the finals. But however,
so like, okay,
with that being said,
like OKC
San Antonio could very
still
well win. But I would like to see Oklahoma City go back and actually compete with whoever. Heat, Pacers, more than likely the Heat.
Okay. Okay. Well, that's going to be all for us for this particular program. Thanks to Lauren Beasley for joining us. Certainly, we'll look forward to talking to her as the playoffs move on. Lauren, thanks always for joining the program.
Oh, thanks for having me. I appreciate the opportunity as always.
All right, enjoy the games.
Most definitely.
Lauren Beasley joined the program as she gave you her insight on the playoffs. I like San Antonio to win the whole thing. Even though I think Oklahoma City matches up very well with them, and I, over the course of the season, I would have favored San Antonio's Oklahoma City to win that play, to win that series. But I think this is San Antonio's year. I think they're well rested. None of their players played beyond 30. They didn't have one guy that played 30 minutes. So we know how well rested they are. Hungry from last year. I'd like San Antonio to win it all this year. I normally don't pick the Spurs to win it, considering, you know, their age and what it's been the past couple of years. But I think they get championship number 5 this particular year. That's going to wrap it up for this latest edition of the Circle Review. I will see you next time. Have a great weekend.